All content discussed on Hypochondriac are the individual opinions of Dr. Priyanka Wally and Sean Hayes and should not be construed as personalized medical advice. By listening to this podcast, you agree not to use this podcast as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or others. Consult your own physician for any medical issues that you may be having. This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the podcast.
I'm Dr. Priyanka Wally, medical doctor and stand-up comedian.
And I'm Sean Hayes, actor and hypochondriac. It's safe to say that I'm not America's first hypochondriac, but I am America's first hypochondriactor. Oh my goodness, oh my goodness.
Is that him?
Oh my gosh,
it's Sean.
Wait, did you ever see the musical Annie?
Yeah, but, you know, a long time ago. I don't know it by heart, but why?
One of the little girls would say, oh my goodness. Anyway, who gives a shit about that?
That was like me in elementary school.
Oh, my goodness. But you know who was our Annie in our dinner? Pheasant Run Dinner Theater was the place I worked at. It was the best. We created a family.
Oh, yeah. You told me. Yeah. Right. You used to work at dinner theater.
Yeah. And it was the best. And when I moved out, Anna Klumsky, remember? She's a good friend of mine. She was in the movie My Girl. Uh-huh. And she was in Veep with Julie Louis-Dreyfus.
Oh, yes. She was Annie?
She was Molly. And she was the one who used to say, oh, my goodness. In this little dinner theater in St. Charles, Illinois. And now she was just on Veep. And now she's on Inventing Anna. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Loved that show, by the way. So isn't it amazing, Sean, how small the world is?
I can't even talk about it. It's the smallest world.
I mean, yeah, the degrees of separation. We are all so intricately connected to one another. It's incredible.
Yeah. It happens to me all the time. Like, I always run into, like, this person who knew this person, and it's just...
Yes.
I have 7,000 stories about that, but whatever.
Yes.
Do you want to hear one of them?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I have time.
Nothing but time. Okay, so this isn't about a person, but this is about an incident. So when I was a kid, really, really little, okay. I used to watch the show Soap. Remember the show Soap?
No.
Billy Crystal was on it. Billy Crystal played one of the first gay characters on TV. And it was a huge hit show in the 70s. I think it was on ABC.
Okay.
And another small world, somebody in that show, by the way, sidebar, went to my high school in Glen Ellyn, Illinois.
See, that's exactly the kind of stuff I'm talking about. It's crazy.
Okay, so I used to be fascinated with the opening of Soap because remember when shows used to have all of those like 5-minute intros before the show started, like with the song, the theme song.
Right, where the people would be like looking to the side and then they'd like zoom in.
So on Soap, it was about two rival families. And one of them was, every episode would go, these are the Tates and these are the Campbells. And the establishing shots of those two houses was to show the socioeconomic level of those people, right? Uh-huh. One was kind of like a very Roseanne kind of house, you know, and the other one was a big mansion, right?
Uh-huh.
And so me growing up so poor, I was like, oh my God, what would it be like to live in that brick mansion in this gorgeous neighborhood? So I was obsessed with watching the opening of Soap every time when I was a kid.
Wow.
Obsessed with this one house. It was so gorgeous.
Uh-huh.
So then, I don't know, about like 7 years ago or so, Scotty and I had a few to drink, and we go down that rabbit hole on YouTube of watching old openings of TV shows, right? We're like, oh my God, watch the opening credits of Dallas and then like Knots Landing and Facts of Life and like, you know, all those old shows.
Yeah.
Magnum PI, like whatever it was. And so I remembered and I said, oh, Scotty, I was obsessed with this house when I was a kid and the opening of Soap. Let's YouTube that to try to find it. So we find the opening of Soap. We get to the part where the house was where I was obsessed as a kid. And I go, wait a minute, pause. It's the house right behind ours.
No, it's not.
Swear.
Oh my gosh, I just got chills.
Swear.
No,
to
it's
God.
Not. Oh my gosh.
Isn't that bananas?
Oh my gosh.
And I freaked out because I'd walk by it a million times because I'd take the dog for a walk or I'd walk around the neighborhood or whatever.
So your childhood dream ended up coming true.
Yeah, well, it became a backyard childhood dream. Yeah.
I mean, but still, Sean, come on. I mean, what are the odds?
Isn't that
literally
crazy?
Oh my gosh, the universe. I can't with the universe sometimes.
I know, it's crazy.
That is a wonderful story.
It's nuts. I know.
Okay, here's a question for you then.
Mm-hmm.
Your current house that's behind the house that you fantasized about as a kid.
Right.
Do you think you subconsciously knew that your current house was behind your fantasy house and that's what drew you to your current house?
No, I don't think so. I think I was driving around the neighborhood, you know, this beautiful neighborhood I live in. And I was like, gosh, I've never even heard of this neighborhood. And I've lived in L.A. for like 8 years or so.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, look at these. It's so pretty. And the streets are so pretty. And there's trees. And it reminds me of the suburbs of Chicago.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Like a John Hughes neighborhood where John Hughes shot all of those comedies in the 80s and 90s. My mom always said, oh, my gosh, if we had a brick house, that would be amazing. Because she always thought, like, if you had a brick house, you made it, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of
was obsessed with a brick house, right? I just saw this house one day. It was for sale. And I was like, I'm going to go for it. And it was way more than I could afford at the time. Anyway, that's that.
Oh, I love that. I love that story.
But talk about small world.
I love how your mom was into bricks, knowing very little about the California earthquake scene and the danger of brick homes.
I know. Well, mine's a brick veneer.
That's adorable.
A brick veneer. Yeah.
Right.
So, but wait, I want to talk to you about this thing that I've had.
Okay.
And I've always wondered if there's something to this, because I think I'm onto something. So whenever I have a nightmare, which isn't a lot, yeah, but when I do have it, I'm always like, you know, I'm in the middle, I'm like, yeah, I kind of moan through it, right?
Oh, right. You make a noise.
Yeah, I make a noise. But I always wake up from the nightmare on my back with my head totally flat against the pillow. I'm not on my back with my head to the side or to the left. I'm on my back with my head completely in line with my body. And by the way, like clockwork, whenever I have a nightmare, I'm always in that position. So I wonder if it has anything to do with blood flow to the back of the brain. Or am I completely making that up?
So lots of different things cause nightmares. You're talking about decreased blood flow to the brain. Very unlikely as a potential nightmare source, but never say never, right? Here's a couple of questions for you. Do you remember the content of the dreams that end up waking you up?
Yes, of course.
Are there recurring themes?
Yes.
Okay, so there's lots of things that cause nightmares. Stress. Nightmares can also be a cardinal feature of PTSD. So especially if you're having the same dreams, it can be trauma related.
Wow.
Medications can cause nightmares. Blood pressure medications, certain antidepressant medications. Anything that messes up your GABA receptor, like things like alcohol, can actually induce nightmares, because when you drink alcohol and then you go to sleep in the middle of the night, the alcohol wears off and you go through like a mini withdrawal.
Oh, wow.
And that can cause the nightmares.
I don't drink anymore. Oh. I didn't know if I was guessing like maybe correctly, where like when you're on your back with your head on your pillow on totally straight, if like blood hits a certain part of the brain, you know, because all the blood's going down.
So if your blood vasculature is totally normal, there should be no reason you're losing blood supply to your brain when you're lying flat on your back with your head kind of looking straight forward.
Well, I don't mean losing supply. I just meant like it's directed into one area.
There's not going to be enough blood pooling in a way that's going to cause what you're describing.
Don't talk to me so condescendingly.
No,
I'm kidding.
But I think there's definitely something to explore here. And I've talked in another episode about this specific type of therapy. It's called cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, where you do therapy around the dream itself and the content of the dreams and basically work your way around that. So I don't know what the dream is.
Yeah. Oh, you don't want
to
know.
Nor do we need to get into it. Yeah. So we don't have to get into it, but basically this could be stress related, trauma related. I'm curious if when you are experiencing more stress than usual, does the nightmare happen more often?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Okay.
And by the way, I was probably traumatized by watching The Exorcist as a child.
Oh, God.
Why was I allowed to see that movie as a child?
Oh, my gosh.
That is traumatizing.
I actually never even saw the movie. I was just traumatized from the commercial.
Yeah, you can't see it.
In fact, I don't think I was allowed to watch it because it was so scary.
It's so scary. Yeah. It's so effed up.
Sean, are you like this? I have a really hard time with horror movies.
Well, now I do. As a kid, I was like, ooh, you like to be scared, but now I don't.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
Yeah, real life is scary enough.
I remember when I was a kid, I saw the movie Leprechaun. Do you remember that movie?
With Jennifer Aniston. I tease her about it all the time.
It traumatized me.
Yeah, it was creepy.
For weeks. Yeah. It was so scary. But hey, Sean, you know who's not scary?
Yes, and who's a dream, not a nightmare.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to meet him.
Is Larry Wilmore. Have you never met Larry Wilmore?
I have never met him.
Oh, he's the greatest.
But I am such a huge fan of him and his work and everything he's done.
Yeah.
Yeah, I cannot wait to meet him.
He's a dream. He's so funny and so sweet. But before we get to him, let's get to one of our callers.
Yes.
The first caller, his name is Mark. Let's listen to Mark.
Hey, Sean. This is Mark from Los Angeles. Hi, Dr. Wally as well. Sean, I think you're going to love this story.
Ooh.
When I was about 7 years old, when I would urinate at random times, there'd be this massive searing pain that went from the tip of my penis almost into my pelvis and down my leg.
Oh, God.
And after I finished urinating, that pain would remain for quite a while, and I couldn't move. If I took a step, the pain would come back. Sometimes I had to wait there 15 minutes until the pain subsided.
Oh my God, so it's 7 years old.
I told my mom about it. She took me to a doctor. They did a radioactive dye test, and I didn't have a UTI. There was nothing wrong with my bladder or my urinary tract. And he gave me like this milky liquid that was, I swear, half chalk. that was supposed to help. But a week went by and the pain came back. We went back to that doctor and he said, don't drink soda or carbonated drinks, especially dark ones like Pepsi or Coke. Mm. He said, because sometimes prepubescent boys have difficulty digesting the carbonation. Mm. So, side note, this was the late 70s and soda was everywhere and non-carbonated drinks were nowhere. So I was drinking like Tang and Limeade and Hawaiian Punch. They all had food coloring and had a ton of sugar, but they weren't carbonated.
Right.
So from age 7 to about 17, I never drank soda and it never came back.
Wow. Right.
So that was the issue. But of all these years, I've told very few people and no one has ever had this issue except me.
That's wild.
So that's my story. Thank you very much. Bye.
Wow.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Mark, what an incredible story. Yeah, my goodness.
That's crazy. I love that he's like, you're going to love this, Sean, because it has to do with pain in the tip of the penis.
I also love that Mark was like, I've never told anyone this. And the two people I've told, they have no idea what I'm talking about. But now I'm going to tell the whole world on Hypochondriac.
I love that. He's like, you can't drink soda like Pepsi or Coke. But what about Dr. Pepper?
Right. So here's the thing about what Mark is saying. There's actually a laundry list of certain food items that are very common bladder irritants, meaning they irritate the bladder lining. And carbonated beverages are one of them, including things like fizzy water and sugar, especially artificial sweeteners or fructose or sucrose. Caffeine is another one. Chocolate can cause bladder irritation.
Even plain carbonated water?
Yes, yes. Wow. And we don't completely understand why. I'm not talking about a UTI bladder irritation. I'm just talking about bladder irritation that's non-infectious.
Yeah.
It can be caused by certain substances. And it's not that all people are sensitive to these products. Most people are not sensitive at all to these products. But there was something about the chemical component in carbonated beverages and processed sodas that was causing Mark to experience this very disruptive and uncomfortable symptom, especially at the age of 7. Can you imagine?
I know. How sad. I felt so bad for little Mark. But it's interesting that he said from 7 to 17, I wonder if he went back to drinking carbonated drinks if it came back. I would love to know that.
And then it came back. I know. But Mark, I'm glad you're feeling better.
Yeah, wait. So what in the carbonation causes the irritant, I wonder?
There's something about changing the urine pH that then leads to these symptoms. And there are actually certain medications that you can take that will change your urine pH to reduce these symptoms.
Oh, wow.
Like, let's say chocolate causes the irritation.
Yeah, you just eat more chocolate.
You just eat more chocolate?
Should take care of it.
Well, that's not exactly what I would advise, but you can take certain medications that will alter your urine pH.
Oh, wow.
I think it's really interesting. I'm grateful because I can drink fizzy water.
I know, me too.
But yeah, I can't imagine. But Mark, thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm glad you're doing okay.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, Mark, for the call. Let's go to our next one. His name is Joe. Let's listen.
Hey, Sean and Dr. Wally. I'm Joe. I'm from Los Angeles. Big fan of the show. Wonderful stuff. Just got done listening to the Allison Brie episode, and it brought back some traumatic memories for me. I was diagnosed in my early 30s with glaucoma, which is very unusual.
Wow.
My doctor always said I was just lucky, but there was no genetic history of it, and there's no eye trauma. I just had it. Mm-hmm. And the pressures in my left eye got really bad by my mid-30s, and I woke up one morning, and I was blind in my left eye.
Oh, my God. And wow.
This was due to the pressure causing a blister on my cornea, which then popped.
Wow.
But to me, it was just grayed and gone. And they immediately had to do an emergency surgery and put a barbell implant to divert the pressure in my left eye. And as the pressures got worse in my right eye, the next year or so, they ended up doing it in my right eye as well. So I have implants in both eyes. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's my little freaky glaucoma story. I heard you mentioning glaucoma there, and I wanted to see if maybe you had some insight for people about that disease.
Mm.
So anyway, thank you for your show.
Joe, thank you for calling in with this story.
That's wild. I can't believe you can wake up blind. I don't understand.
I mean, Sean, did you know that glaucoma is actually, after cataracts, the second leading cause of blindness in the world?
But isn't there a cure for both?
Well, there are treatments for glaucoma, absolutely.
Yeah, we talked about it before. Yeah, I remember that.
There are certain medications, and then if, in Joe's case, surgical procedures. So what happens in the eye is there's a liquid in your eye. It's actually called aqueous humor.
Ooh, my penis! Which I think is a really,
okay, we got the penis pain. Okay, let's take a breath. Okay. Let's take a breath. Okay, we'll breathe through this one. I'll simplify it even more then. It's when there's pressure that builds up in your eye, and it's because basically there's too much aqueous humor, too much fluid in the eye.
But when you have cataract, you know you have cataract because there's a little tiny film over your eye, right? Mm-hmm. But do you know you have glaucoma?
You can experience symptoms, right? Well, Joe was kind of a unique case because Joe's vision just started kind of going bad. But a lot of people get glaucoma very slowly. They might not have symptoms for years and years and years,
yeah.
Which is why you need to go to an eye doctor every year to get your eyes
right.
checked and your pressure checked.
I hate
and
it.
Then slowly the symptoms might change.
Oh, you know it's so gross? Oh,
I know. We got so much penis hurting. Okay.
But it also makes me want to vomit a little bit because I know when I go get my glaucoma checked and they touch your eyeball with that thing.
Yeah, they touch your eyeball. I know.
Oh, God,
I know.
It's so gross.
Okay, let's just slow down. But Joe, thank you. I'm glad that your vision is okay right now.
Yeah, but just keep getting a check.
Yes. Well, we should all be going to get our eyes checked once a year.
For sure. And wait, sidebar, did we talk about this before? Did you see this new thing on the TV? I've seen these commercials where you can put eye drops in your eye and you can fucking read. Did you see this?
You mentioned it, but I didn't have a chance to like research it yet.
That's insane. And the actors in the commercial are like, what? That's not right. And they're like, I don't believe it. No, it's true. You put drops in your eyes and it cures your farsightedness.
Okay, I have to look this up.
Yeah, it's insane. Well, put the drops in and then you can look it up.
Yes.
Joe, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
You're the best. The number to leave us a message is 1-323-529-6031. Again, 1-323-529-6031. Keep sharing your stories with us. We love it. Let's get to our guest.
We are supported by Green Chef. Green Chef is a CCOF certified meal kit company. Green Chef makes eating well easy with plans to fit every lifestyle, whether you're keto, paleo, vegan, vegetarian, gluten-free, or just looking to eat more balanced meals. Green Chef offers a range of recipes to suit your preferences. I love using Green Chef. I actually gift it to family members who are super busy, and it completely fits their lifestyle and their diet, and it saves so much time. Get access to unique farm-fresh ingredients like figs, dates, and artichokes, plus sustainably sourced seafood. Green Chef saves you time by cutting down on weekly meal planning, prepping, and grocery shopping. Whether you're looking for carb-conscious, gluten-free, plant-based, or calorie-conscious options, or you just want to have delicious, balanced dishes, Green Chef has flavorful, feel-good recipes that are sure to satisfy. Green Chef is the most sustainable meal kit and the only meal kit that is both carbon and plastic offset. We offset 100% of our carbon footprint as well as 100% of the plastic in every box. With Green Chef, you get premium ingredients and sustainably sourced seafood so you can feel great about what you're eating and how it got to your table. Go to greenchef.com/hypo130 and use code hypo130 to get $130 off plus free shipping. That's greenchef.com/hypo130 and use code hypo130 to get $130 off plus free shipping. Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well.
We are supported by Nutrafol. 80 million men and women in the U.S. experience thinning hair. Yes, it's still not openly talked about, which can make going through it feel scary and stressful, and that just adds to the problem. It's time to change the conversation and join the thousands of people standing up for their strands with Nutrafol. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement, clinically shown to improve your hair growth, thickness, and visible scalp coverage for men and women. Did you know that there are multiple causes of thinning hair? Nutrafol is the hair growth supplement that goes beyond genetics to target stress, hormones, nutrition, metabolism, aging, and lifestyle factors that may be impacting your hair. Thinning is different for men and women. Nutrafol has multiple unique formulas for men and women to provide exactly what they need based on their biology and age. Every formula is physician formulated using natural medical grade ingredients for reliable results without compromises. In clinical studies, 72% of men saw more scalp coverage and 86% of women saw improved hair growth after 6 months. That's great. Nutrafol is also trusted and recommended by more than 3,000 top doctors. You can grow thicker, healthier hair and support our show by going to Nutrafol.com and entering the promo code ACTOR to save $15 off your first month subscription. This is their best offer anywhere, and it's only available to U.S. customers for a limited time. Plus, free shipping on every order. Get $15 off at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code ACTOR. There's my guy. Listen, our guest today is a producer, an actor, a comedian, a writer. He's worked on In Living Color, The Bernie Mac Show, Insecure, The Nightly Show with Larry Wilmore, The Office.
It's too many.
A million shows. It's too many. I can't even breathe. It would take our entire show to read all your credits. You can listen to his podcast, Larry Wilmore, Black on the Air, which is hilarious. Wherever you get your podcast, it's my friend, the hilarious Larry Wilmore.
Sean, it's so good to see you. How are you, Priyanka?
Larry, it's so nice to meet you.
It's so nice to meet you, too.
I'm such a huge fan.
Thank you so much.
Larry, this is crazy. You're so nice to come on here.
You're the busiest man in showbiz, too.
Okay, wait a minute.
You have like 10 podcasts right now.
11.
And they're all like top five. Yeah. He crushes it wherever he goes.
Seriously, yeah.
Oh, wait a minute.
No, you get your flowers first, mister. You get your flowers first.
I want my tiara to match. So listen, yeah. You're like the most prolific everything in Hollywood. You really, truly are. And I love that you're saying that about me, but it's like true.
Oh, thank you.
Your hands have been in some of the most, you know, iconic, celebrated things. I love Issa Rae, by the way, and I had no idea you were co-creator of Insecure.
Love that
that
show.
Is such a great show. I love her.
So good. Mm-hmm.
But I want to know, is there like a show that you developed that you worked really hard that was close to your heart that didn't go, and what was that? What was that like?
Oh yeah. How much time do we have?
We have as much time as you want.
We have 17 hours.
There's a couple of them. One that was inexplicable. After I did the Bernie Mac show, it was kind of a falling out with the studio and all that stuff. It was a big high profile firing.
You got fired?
I got fired from, yeah.
From Bernie Mac?
From the Bernie Mac show I created.
Wow.
I didn't know that.
Which I won an Emmy Award for the pilot. I won a Peabody, a TV Critics Award, Golden Globe nominee, Humanitas, every award. And they kept thinking that I didn't know what I was doing.
Wow.
That's what all of our meetings were.
Jeez. <You know?
laughs> Of course they did.
That was the argument. We think you're incompetent. We keep winning every award possible.
By the way, one of the greatest shows ever.
Yeah, totally.
Thank you. It's the show I'm most proud of that almost didn't squeak through. It was because I got it under the radar and got it in.
Oh, interesting.
Wait, so then you got let go or whatever.
Yeah, it was crazy.
How many seasons did it last after you were gone?
A few seasons. You know, people felt that it wasn't quite the same. But we were doing something different, a whole different kind of rhythm. Everything was multicam. People were doing like Will and Grace, things like that, you know.
What?
Very popular show. But those shows, you know, they have a certain rhythm, they have a certain feel to them.
Yeah.
Most of Sullivan is like that. You know, your show's one of the great examples of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, you hear the audience laughing. They're very fun shows. It's classic television, the multicam. But there weren't a lot of single cams at that time. And I wanted to do a show that was kind of observed. It felt like we were eavesdropping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I was really inspired by that documentary. It's called 1900 House. I don't know if you ever saw this, Sean. But guys, this was so cool. They rigged these cameras in a house and these people had to live as if it was 1900.
Wait, what?
Wow. Oh, it was fascinating.
Like a reality show?
Exactly. It was on PBS, and it was a real family, and there were cameras rigged up. And of course, the wife had it the worst. Of course. You know what I mean? Oh my God, the shit that she had to do. And you couldn't bail out. And they had like one kind of confessional camera that people could go to.
Yeah.
They were in England too. I had a Snickers bar. I know I wasn't supposed to have it, but I couldn't help myself. I can't eat this crap that we have to eat. 1900? I'm sorry.
No way.
And I thought, this is fascinating. And so the Bernie Mac show came out of my observation of what was happening in reality and observing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the notes I got were based on sitcom form, which is mostly farce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just a different speed, you know.
Yeah. That's fascinating. I want to watch that now.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah.
1900 House. And they had some follow-ups. One was called Frontier House. That was in America. People had to live like pioneers on the frontier. And that was fascinating.
Interesting.
I watched that.
Yeah.
And then you're watching that, or maybe you're watching 1900 or whatever, and you go, there's no need for this TV show. I'll just read about it.
Right.
I'll just read about how they lived. I don't need to see it or experience it.
Exactly. See, Sean, with you, there'd be barely no documentaries if it was just up to you.
That's what I'm saying.
You know?
So we have this one project, but it seems like you have so many projects because you are truly one of the nicest guys I've ever met in the business. I've been a fan of yours for such a long time. You've always made me laugh, especially on your own show.
Oh, thanks, man.
So tell me about what Black on the Air is, which is a great title.
So Black on the Air is my podcast.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this is where I get to bring the flavor of what I did in late night with just my total interest about everything. It's mm-hmm. not confined to that kind of political arena that Late Night's kind of confined
right.
in. Because, you know, as you're talking to you, Sean, I have so many different entrants. I had David Copperfield on. Like, I'm an amateur magician. I'm a member of the Magic Castle.
Yeah.
Wait, you had him on?
Yeah, I had David Copperfield. I went up to Vegas and he took me on a tour of his museum and everything, showed me a show.
What?
I even showed him a trick and it kind of blew him away. I'm like a little kid going, I had David Copperfield on my show. You know, and then another week I might have a real newsy person or whatever. But to me, I was excited about having him on.
That's so great.
But, you know, when I talk to actors, we can talk about the process a little bit more, not just promoting the film or that type of thing.
Right. I love that stuff.
I just had Barry Levinson on, who told an amazing story about how he started in showbiz. It was fantastic, you know?
Yeah, Barry's great. That's so cool that you're doing that.
Yeah, it's fun.
How long have you been doing that? And I got to tune in.
5 years since 2017 is when I started.
Wow.
My first guest, I think, was Norman Lear. We had a great talk about his career in television and all that stuff. It was awesome.
By the way, he's 100, right? Isn't he 100 years old?
He has to be now. Mm, it's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, he literally is 100 years old. And still, like, with it, witty, sharp.
Ridiculous.
Walks around. He's got his little bowler hat. Yeah. It's fantastic.
He had a hipster hat before anybody had a hipster hat. Yeah.
He did. Wait, now I want to know about Jerry and Marge Go Large.
Yes.
I love this show. It's about somebody winning the lotteries. You, Brian Cranston, you're acting in it with Annette Bening, who I love. Mm-hmm.
So this is a different lane that I'm in, that I appear in shows and movies as an actor, because acting's been something I've been doing. Actually, it was the first thing that I did, you know.
Forever, yeah.
Yeah, so I love doing it. And it's Bryan Cranston and Annette Bening, who are an amazing couple. It's based on the guy in Michigan who, using math, beat the lottery. So he didn't cheat it. He just outsmarted it. This is a true story. He got the whole town involved, you know.
Wow.
Everybody made money, and then the lottery took the game away. Like, they kind of screwed him at the end of the day.
Oh, that's such a bummer.
No way. Wait, being the lottery we still play today?
Yeah, they made it a different game. It was called Windfall or something like that.
Huh.
And they changed the game because he was beating it.
Oh, wow.
It's a great story, and I play his accountant. And I got the third lead in this movie behind Bryan Cranston. And like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, it's deserved. Served.
But congrats on this, you guys.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you. Well, you know, it's all because I get free advice from my friend, Dr. Priyanka Wally.
So great.
Well, and it's also because Sean has a million different medical issues.
Yeah.
I mean, he's literally donated his body to this podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I've donated it to science before I'm even dead.
Yeah.
Well, see, you can see if they actually need it or not. You know, you can just take it back.
Reject.
Now, wait, I want to get to the good stuff. I want to get to the medical stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm super personally excited to talk to you about what you're about to share. So why don't you go ahead and get started?
Yeah. I've been a bit of an empath, I guess, in my life.
There we go.
Part of that is you take on other people's emotions, feelings, that kind of thing. If you want to, psychologically, my mom kind of had a nervous breakdown when I was growing up. And so my feelings were important, you know, I'd take care of my mom, that type of thing. But, you know, it took me a long time to even learn to be angry and be fine with my own feelings, you know, and that type of thing. Because you feel like your feelings aren't important.
Right.
You know, so I'm just giving you some background to how the empathetic relationship happens, you know, in the world and that type of thing. You relate to someone else's thing more than your own, right?
Yeah.
And I just want to add, in established literature, there's sort of three essential components that define empathy. The first is you have an awareness of the other person's emotions.
Mm-hmm.
The second component is that you recognize there's a distinction between the other person and your own self. And then the third and final component of empathy is that you are actively sharing the other person's emotional state.
Yes.
But I think it's important to remember there's a distinction between the self and the other person.
Wow.
Correct. Yes. So that's emotional. And all of those things make sense. But I had a physical experience which kind of blew me away, which I wasn't ready for. So when my wife was pregnant with our first child, my ex-wife, she gave birth to John in September, and it was really hot summer, so she had a tough pregnancy in that heat. Her body swelled up a lot. You know, it was really tough on her. It was really tough on her lower back, I remember. She's having a lot of pain. So a month before John was born, I had some intense lower back pain. And I'm like, oh, man, what's going on? And I told her a little bit about it, and I thought, oh, maybe it'll go away. I thought I picked up something real fast, you know, as you're doing stuff, but it just wouldn't go away.
Yes.
And by the second week, I could barely walk.
Wow.
And I'm like, what the heck is happening? And I went to the doctor and they did a whole examination. I mean, they really couldn't find anything, but they brought up stuff like, you know, it may be pleurisy. I'm like, pleurisy? What is pleurisy?
What's pleurisy?
Pleurisy is generally a lung issue.
Yeah.
Pleura is the lining of the lung wall. Pleurisy is inflammation of that pleura, basically, which lubricates the lungs, which is...
Didn't even make sense.
I mean, you usually get that from pneumonia or something. So it's not even the right... You're talking about lower back pain.
Yes. It sounded very 19th century. To me too. I didn't appreciate.
We need to bring in the leeches. Yes,
yeah, exactly. They explored that on the show 1900.
Yes, exactly. Right. It's pleurisy.
You were on the show.
Yes, I have a headache. It's pleurisy again.
Right.
So, you know, that didn't make sense to me.
Yes.
It was really intense. I mean, I couldn't stand up straight type of intense.
Okay.
It really was painful.
Wow.
So you were fairly immobilized.
It was bad. But the thing is, I couldn't really complain to my
right.
Oh, so sad you're going through that tough pregnancy. By the way, my back is really in pain right now. So I couldn't even really talk about it. I brought it up very gingerly to her because, you know, there's no way I was going to try to be,
of course,
try to make my pain worse, you know, that type of thing. But I was very concerned about it.
And can I ask a clarifying question?
Sure.
Prior to this pregnancy, you had never experienced low back pain like this before?
Nothing.
Okay, so this is completely new.
Nothing even close. You know, I played sports growing up. I was an athlete. I was very in tune with body pain.
Sure.
So this was different. Anyhow, I remember the night even her water broke, my back is still hurting. Okay.
Uh-huh.
She was in labor for a really long time. It's a tough pregnancy. And they ended up doing a cesarean.
Uh-huh.
John, my son, was put in ICU for a few days, you know. And my wife emotionally was a bit fragile at that time. It was tough for all of us, but we got through it. And he ended up being healthy and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I just realized, oh, shit, my back isn't hurting. Like, I realized it a week later that my
crazy.
Back wasn't hurting anymore. Just gum.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
For the first time, I thought, could this have been connected? I'm like, no way. It has to be a coincidence.
It's like E.T. and Elliot.
Exactly. By the way, absolutely could have been a coincidence. Could have been chalked up to that. However, we had another child.
Oh, here we go. Now it gets interesting.
Okay.
So a month to go, I go, I wonder if this shit is going to happen again, you know?
Yes.
Nothing's going on, but with 2 weeks to go, my back pain starts again.
No way.
There we go.
Lower back pain in the same place. My wife, by the way, who schedules everything, scheduled a cesarean for this one. It's like, who schedules the birth? Like, we knew when our daughter was going to be born and everything. It's so weird. I scheduled cesarean, so I'm like, I think my back's going to stop hurting at that time that's on the calendar right now, you know? But it wasn't as intense as the first time, but it was still painful.
Mm-hmm.
Sure enough, after my daughter was born.
Gone after the thing.
Gone. And that's when I first put it together as empathetic pain. The first time I thought it was just a coincidence. But when it happened the second time, I'm like, well, this is weird now. This is very bizarre.
So does that fall under, Priyanka, like psychosomatic or what?
So here's what's super fascinating about your story. First thing I just want to point out, the fact that the pain was reproducible in a second setting, I think it points that this is more than just a coincidence. This is now a second pattern, right?
Right.
I want to just say the Western medical system doesn't actually recognize what you're describing as a real diagnosis. Because I think in order to recognize it as a real thing, you have to acknowledge that your feelings are valid and your physical symptoms are valid.
Wow.
But there is some published literature on this. It's called Cuvade syndrome, also known as sympathetic pregnancy.
Wow.
There was actually a study in the Middle East where they looked at a little over 400 people that were going to have a baby, expecting couples. And approximately 59% of the men had Cuvade syndrome.
Wow. No way.
They were experiencing pains or physical symptoms in their body that was correlating with their partner's pregnancy.
Yeah.
It's just fascinating to me because this term, when you say we're having a baby, literally, you literally are together in this.
Some of Priyanka's intelligence, I have empathetic intelligence. It just, it kind of bleeds into me.
It doesn't
me.
Work that way, Sean.
No, it didn't work.
No.
Didn't work. Okay. Must be something else.
We are supported by Solo Stove. Man, Sean, I just love going camping, don't you?
I love it. You know where I love camping the most? My backyard.
Mm.
And here's the thing. And you know what I love about it? I love getting graham crackers, marshmallows, and chocolate and putting them together into a thing called s'more. Because the first time I had my first s'more, it was so great. It was like eating the greatest dessert ever. And
You just wanted some more. Yeah, for sure.
I walked right into it.
Yeah. And, you know, with Solo Stove, when I got it, I was so surprised at how easy it was to just unbox it and set it up and start a fire. There was no, like, challenge with the cleanup. It was just so easy.
It was so easy. And here's the thing about it. It takes you right back to your childhood when you did roast marshmallows by the fire, right? Because we're always trying to find, like, how can I relive those special moments when I was a kid? Solo Stove helps to do that.
Yeah. Upgrade your backyard with a Solo Stove fire pit and create story-worthy moments without the fireside fumes.
Every Solo Stove is made of stainless steel construction designed to regulate airflow and burn more efficiently.
There's so little smoke, you'll wonder how there's so much fire.
It's like a metaphor for my life. It's the perfect catalyst for getting outside and spending more time with family and friends.
Solo Stove fire pits are brilliantly engineered to be easy to use, and they're built to last.
They're easy to light with a few bits of starter. Your fire is blazing in minutes.
They're so confident you'll love it. They offer a lifetime warranty and a 30-day free return policy.
Right now, you can get big discounts on all fire pits during Solo Stove's summer sale. And use promo code HYPO at solostove.com for an extra $10 off. That's solostove.com, promo code HYPO for $10 off on top of their incredible summer sale discounts. But hurry, the summer sale ends June 23rd.
We are supported by Helix Sleep.
How much do you love your Helix? Don't you love it?
I can't even tell you. I've had it for months now. I'm just really obsessed with it. And just the whole process, unboxing it was so fun. I love it.
I know. It was like Christmas when it came. It was like, oh my God, I get a new bed. I can sleep finally. Helix Sleep has a quiz that just takes 2 minutes to complete and matches your body type and sleep preferences to the perfect mattress for you.
Everybody's unique and Helix knows that. So they have several different mattress models to choose from.
I took the Helix quiz and I was matched with the Helix Moonlight mattress because I wanted something that felt soft.
Yeah, it's just a huge upgrade over what I used to have.
Yeah.
And it's soft, but still really supportive.
Yeah. It's like Goldilocks, right? When you're too hard, too soft. It's like
just right.
So if you're looking for a mattress, you take a quiz, you order the mattress that you're matched to, and the mattress comes right to your door, shipped for free. You don't ever need to go to the mattress store again. Helix has been recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to solution for improving sleep.
Just go to helixsleep.com/hypo, take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you a great sleep.
They have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. They'll even pick it up for you if you don't love it, but guess what? You will.
Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/hypo. I'm super excited. Do you want to unpack this a little bit?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be great.
So I'm first thinking about the work of Dr. John Sarno. He writes about this phenomenon that when we have certain emotions that we repress in any setting, if we are not able to recognize what those emotions are and acknowledge them, the body will actually then create physical symptoms to draw our attention to that.
I believe that. Absolutely.
And this can happen in the setting of any stress, whether it's childbirth or losing a job or inheriting a lot of money, positive stress as well. Anything can create this sort of, he coins it, tension myositis syndrome, where basically there are repressed emotions that we're not recognizing and then the body creates physical symptoms.
That's how I would have coined it as well, okay. By the way, just for the record.
So the question I really have for you is, what do you think was going on for you emotionally leading up to the birth of your first and second child that perhaps you weren't creating space for, weren't recognizing?
Oh, well, in the first one, certainly I was worried about my wife. I mean, my primary concern was her health. We had had a miscarriage a year before. And so I was very concerned about her health, both emotionally and physically. I wasn't even thinking about myself. Although a year before, I remember I was at work and I was having some chest pains and I couldn't figure it out. And I was really concerned. So I went to the doctor. He said, is there any like stress in your life right now? I go, I don't think so. He says, what's going on? I said, let's see. I just started a new job. Right. I just bought a new house. Right, I just got married. So I don't know. He's like, those are the three top things. So I'm like,
Right.
I mean, it was literally the three things at the same time.
Yes. You know? And that's exactly the point. Yeah. You know, Dr. Sarno talks in his book about all it is recognition that, hey, this is an actual stressful event and I need to recognize it. And I also want to call back to your original point where you said, I wasn't able to really talk to my wife about my symptoms because she was going through pregnancy.
Right. Absolutely.
So you were already sort of forcing yourself to keep it in.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it further kind of doubled down the process of repressing whatever was coming up for you.
Oh, yeah. But it's a no win for you. I mean, yeah, I could tell someone else, but I can't tell my wife. Honey, I'm sorry you're going through all that back pain. I think mine is on the same
line. Right. Yeah, you can't. So what do you do? Right.
I mean, I told her, but I really couldn't.
Yeah. I know.
You know what
it's
I mean?
It's challenging, right? Here's another question, and feel free to not answer this if it's too personal. But
no, I'll answer anything.
Can you recall when you were in your mom's uterus? Were there any events going on leading up to your own birth that were significant or stressful?
Is there something happening to my parents?
Exactly. So when you were in your mom's womb and 2 weeks before you were set to be born, was there anything significant going on for your mother in terms of, were there any complications related to your own birth that I'm curious about?
I don't think so. The only thing that I learned was that they were at the laundromat when my mom's water broke, and they asked someone to wash their clothes or something. My mom had all these great baby clothes. I have two older sisters, you know, and all this stuff. And of course, the person stole them.
Oh, no way. That's terrible.
All of the clothes were stolen. So that's the only scandal associated with my birth that I know. But no, they never said there was anything extraordinary going on at that
time. Got it.
Not that you would know.
I doubt they would have even had those kind of discussions in those days.
Okay. What I love about your story is that, first of all, we have to recognize in this world we live in, empathy is such an essential part of being human.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We are social creatures. In fact, we need empathy to survive.
And let me just add to that, Larry, and this is why, and I mean this, why I've always thought, the little that I've known you for, you've always been such an incredible human being to me.
Oh, thanks.
As a straight male in the world, to have empathy and to have compassion and to be aware of that is a big deal to people like me and others. It's such a wonderful quality.
Sean, I feel so fortunate because, like, I'm a natural ally. Yeah. So I don't have to work to be, you know. And it's funny, like, I know when my eyes have been open about certain things, but emotionally, if I know someone's story, I'm an ally, you know.
like that type of thing. Yeah, we need more guys like you.
Even on the gay issue, my first thing was at the Taper. It was called the Improvisational Theater Project. And I got my equity card. This is back in the early 80s. And I'm always proud. It's my first one, right? And one of our producers had a husband. And I was like, oh, a guy that has a husband back in those days.
That's wild.
I mean, it's different from having a boyfriend. He called him his husband, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was such a revolutionary way that he put it and the way he would talk about him. And that type of stuff. It was so natural to me, and seeing the pictures of him. And Philip Hemberg was the producer of him. And I'll never forget the power of the way Philip just said that.
Unapologetic. Like, yes. Owned it.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were educated.
Yes, exactly. In the best kind of way. Mm-hmm. You know, I could relate to that type of thing, too, very early on.
It's
you
beautiful.
Know?
And that's very sweet of you to say. And that's great. And I did mean that. But even above anything like that, I just think we need more male figures in the world to their daughters and their sons and their wives and their families to be openly compassionate and emotional instead of all that masculine toxicity.
Yeah. And let me tell you one thing. Without empathy, you can't have intimacy.
I agree with that. 1,000% sure, Priyanka. Yeah. You know, intimacy and empathy, both of those things, we are at a deficit, I believe, these
days.
The proper type of intimacy and the healthy type of empathy as well, you know. Even from a political standpoint, I always tell people I'm a passionate centrist because what I say is half the time I disagree with myself, you know. But what I really try to put out there, it's not so much a both sides thing, but I call it active listening.
Yes.
Just actively listen to people. Don't wait to say your thing.
Amen.
Listen to somebody. Everybody has a story, and everybody's story is legit.
100%.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Back to the empathy thing. Do you recognize it coming on if you ever find yourself in a similar situation, not with a pregnancy or anything, but something that stresses you out that you internalize?
Mm.
Yeah, nothing's been quite like that. But there are some things if I hear like somebody describing a heart attack, I go, oh, no, no.
You know?
There's some things I can't hear because it makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Not that I'm having the symptoms. It makes my body uncomfortable. Right. But nothing quite like that. But I do think it's because my wife and I were so connected that that happened. Yeah. I think that that type of connection has a big thing to do with it. Like, I'm not going to be that to a stranger or that type of thing.
Right.
The connected part of it was a big difference.
Totally. And I just want to, again, comment on something you said earlier where you were surprised that it wasn't emotional symptoms. It was primarily physical. There's a lot of studies that have been published where they have done functional MRI brain studies on people, and they can locate exactly in the brain where emotional pain occurs and physical pain occurs. And there's significant overlap.
Wow.
It actually occurs in the same parts of the brain. So when you hurt someone's feelings, it can literally cause them physical pain because it's acting on the same part of the brain.
Wow.
So it goes back to this idea that the mind and the body is very connected. These aren't two separate entities.
Yeah. Well, so the expression heartache.
Yes.
Oh.
Heartbreak.
Larry Wilmore.
Yes.
What?
Heartbroken produces heartache. It's not just a heart thump.
Yes.
Uh-huh. You know,
there's pain that's there.
That's so good.
There's actually a medical diagnosis called Takotsubo's cardiomyopathy, where after experiencing a significant stress, the person will present with chest pain and you do EKGs on them, mm-hmm. and it looks like they're having a heart attack based off of the EKGs.
Wow.
And then you actually take a look at the heart tissue. There's no heart attack. The emotional stress is causing their heart to act in a way as if it was having a heart attack, but it's not.
Completely believe that. Going back to my mom, my mom, we call her a hypochondriac, you know. She has so much emotional stressors, and it's a lot related to things in her past. Mm-hmm. But we've called the paramedics and the hospital. She's had all these things. Nothing was ever wrong whenever they've done tests. And I believe what you're saying, Priyanka, the emotional pain she was going through causes and has caused a lot of her physical pain.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And it works the opposite way, too, because, like, Priyanka, your heart races whenever you look at me.
Oh, my gosh. I'm sweating.
Yeah.
My armpits are sweating. There's vomit on my chest.
Yes.
Mom's spaghetti.
Oh, my God. Oh, I like that spaghetti arm.
I just wanted to comment that, to your mother's experience, part of the issue is, again, the Western model, the current medical system model, it's not doing that great of a job of acknowledging people's emotional experiences as part of the entire medical story.
It's dismissed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very much dismissed. Like, oh, go see a psychiatrist or go see a therapist. Like, oh, this is all head stuff. So that's different. But no, we need to be thinking about it as very intricately connected with the body as well.
I love that.
Yeah. I personally think that there's a lot of PTSD that's coming out of the pandemic.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And we've already seen some of the physical manifestations, but I think the price to be paid for that is yet to be felt.
Yeah, I think definitely. So too. In what ways do you think?
Well, I think we are sitting on the precipice of major chronic illness for millions and millions of people, whether you want to call it psychological trauma from the pandemic itself or people who are going to be having long COVID or any kind of complication from that. I mean, I think there will be lots of people that are currently suffering and will continue to suffer unless the medical system starts to really think about things from a more holistic perspective.
Wow. Fascinating.
Yeah. There'll be more things like nerve pain and back pain, things like that. Things that are harder to address, you know?
Yeah.
Yes.
I bet you migraines are going to be a much bigger deal. You know, I see more young people suffering from migraines now than I remember.
Yeah.
But I think migraines are one of those hard to understand things, too, sometimes.
Yeah, I could go on and on about that.
I mean, that's a whole other episode we could break down.
You know, it's a cure for migraine.
Our game?
Some games. Yeah.
Yes.
I had some really inappropriate jokes as the answer.
Oh, great. Fantastic.
Please chime in all the time.
So let's play Dr. Wally's Hall of Fame. You're each going to get three questions with possible points for creativity. Sean, you're up first.
Fantastic. Ready? Yes, ready.
When treating kidneys that are failing, the process of removing excess water, solutes, and toxins from the blood is known as what in medicine?
Dialysis.
That is correct. The answer is dialysis.
That's like the first like hard question I've ever gotten on the show.
I'm really honestly surprised you got that right. That's incredible.
Yeah, I don't know how I know that.
I actually knew that, but I couldn't remember dialysis.
I know. Why did I know that word?
I would have also accepted renal replacement therapy, RRT.
Sure. Renal replacement therapy. Yeah.
Okay. Second question, Sean. In the field of entertainment, what does VHS stand for?
Oh, that's a good question. What does VHS stand for? Well, the first thing is going to be video.
Yes.
Video home system.
That is correct, Sean.
Is there?
I cannot believe this. Two for two.
Nice. Larry, it never goes like this.
That's amazing.
He usually does terrible, Larry. Okay. Sean, third question. Let's see. When you hosted Saturday Night Live in 2001, it was the last episode for which longtime cast member?
Of course. She's a very good friend of mine. She lives three blocks away. Her name is Molly Shannon.
That is correct. Sean, you got all three right. Holy crap.
Molly's so great. She played Mary Catherine Gallagher on that last show.
Yes.
And they did School's Out for Summer, right? They played that song. And as Mary Catherine, she goes, last show. Anyway.
I met Molly before she was famous in an improv show in L.A., and she was crawling, like, up the walls.
Really?
Yeah. I'm like, who is this person?
Yes.
It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life.
She was bound to make it.
Okay, Larry, are you ready?
I'm scared now.
Okay. Yeah. Don't be scared, I promise. Okay, Larry, first question. What does the medical term tachycardia refer to?
It sounds like a heart condition.
Very good. Yes, that's correct.
Is it irregular heartbeat, maybe?
That is very close. I will give you that. It's a rapid heart rate.
Well, there you go.
Where your heart is beating over 100 beats per minute. So very good.
So that's AFib.
No, so AFib is actually an irregular rhythm, whereas tachycardia is an abnormal heart rate.
Oh, wow.
So
gotcha.
The rate is just like how fast it's going, but the rhythm is different.
Got it.
I was in the ballpark. Good.
Okay, Larry, second question. Which Sex and the City star ran for political office in New York?
I believe it is the woman who just gave the commencement speech at my daughter's graduation at Barnard, the lovely Cynthia Nixon.
Oh, that's so cool. Okay.
Wait, is that true?
Yeah, she was awesome.
That's great. I love her.
See, what a small world. Okay, third question. You made a guest appearance in season one of The Office as a diversity representative for Dunder Mifflin. Mm-hmm. Your character was asked to speak to the Scranton branch after Michael Scott impersonated which comedian?
Chris Rock.
Yes, that is correct.
Oh my God.
It's so good.
As you know, I was a producer on the show. So it's not
I mean, my God, you've done everything.
But the outtakes to that, Priyanka, are hilarious.
Yes. There's a separate Instagram account that is all Office bloopers.
Yes. Now, I have the original DVDs from our dailies that have never been published.
Really?
Oh, that's amazing.
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah, I haven't watched it in years.
Will you ever put those out somewhere?
Probably not. I mean, Steve is too good of a guy.
All right.
Okay, so we actually have a tie.
Uh-oh.
So we're going into tiebreaker round. All right. So the way tiebreaker round works, first person to answer correctly or close enough wins.
Okay.
Are you both ready?
I think so. We don't have to buzz in or something like that.
No,
right?
You just say it.
Okay.
In Old Yeller, what viral disease is plaguing Kansas?
Old Yeller. It has to be
Spanish flu?
Syphilis?
Okay. Neither of you are correct. The answer is rabies.
Oh.
Or hydrophobia.
We both won. We both leave winning.
Okay. We have two winners.
I'll stay.
Holla at your boy.
Larry Wilmore, thank you for coming. You are the best. We both won today. That's never happened before.
Thanks, Sean. Priyanka, it's so nice to meet you.
It was such a pleasure to meet you. And I just want to say thank you so much for talking about empathy in this way, because I think it's such an important topic.
Of course.
And sharing your experience, I think, is going to open the door for a lot of people out there who have probably experienced the same thing to know that they aren't alone.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with empathy.
That's it.
Taking the attention off yourself.
No, F off!
Yes, exactly.
No, Larry, I love you. I'm sure we'll chat soon.
Love you too, man. Absolutely. Thank you,
guys. Pal.
Thank you so much.
See you, Larry.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, man, Sean, that was a real treat.
Isn't he great? I mean, can you believe all that he's done, too?
Yeah, I mean, prolific.
I know. I mean, he's super famous, but I'm like, he's always kind of real to himself. He's kind of under the radar all the time. And it's like, no, it's Larry Wilmore of a million projects and a million things. And I'm so excited about that movie he's got coming up with Bryan Cranston and Annette Bening, who I love.
Seriously, yeah. And I love this topic because I love when we're talking about, especially the gray areas of medicine, you know, parts where it's not completely recognized yet, but you know, there are things going.
Yeah.
I mean, this is significant. We had a man come on the show talking about empathizing with a woman's experience. Like, that's great stuff. We need to see more of that. Please sign me up.
Perfect.
Let's do it.
I love it. I'd marry him if I wasn't married and he was gay and interested. But anyway, everybody, thank you for listening. We love that you tuned into us and keep doing it. And until next time, don't worry, be healthy. Bye.
Bye.
Hypochondriactor is a Hazy Mills production hosted by me, Sean Hayes, and Dr. Priyanka Wally. Rebecca Eisenberg and Todd Milliner are our executive producers. Production and editing is by Rabbit Grin Productions. Original music by Scott Eisenogle and Lior Rosner. This is a Hazy Mills production. All content discussed on Hypochondriactor are the individual opinions of Dr. Priyanka Wally and Sean Hayes and should not be construed as personalized medical advice. By listening to this podcast, you agree not to use this podcast as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or others. Please consult your own physician for any medical issues that you may be having. This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the podcast.